This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
I love my job. I really love what I do. But there's a real shame surrounding it. We're essentially, in my opinion, in the same situation that we were 10 years ago. But you still go onto a building site, you still walk into a pub, and you'll say what you do for a living, and people don't want to engage with you. And there's all this furore, there's all this uproar, and everyone's like, it's bloody health and safety. No one's been involved from a safety perspective in that decision. We're still getting the blame for things. We still become that scapegoat for like uncomfortable decisions. I'm having to spend more time sat in the office logging near misses all day long when I should be out on site dealing with the real problems. That's the main thing I would love to see the back of, is incentivising safety for the wrong reason. And they're too scared to even comment publicly on LinkedIn because the fear of what their peers would think. And it's like, how are we ever going to make an impact? How are we ever going to make change if we're still stuck in this mindset? When I think about what has made me successful, it's not been my ability to know legislation off the top of my head. The fact that I can identify every single hazard. It's actually the fact that I can go out there and I can have a conversation with people, and I'm pretty confident. We've got a lot of elements in the safety world that I think have just been accepted and become embedded in the sort of culture of being a safety professional. You don't challenge them. It's just Groundhog Day again and again and again. So I'm learning from the workforce just as much as they're learning things from me. And I think none of that skill comes from my technical knowledge on things. The Safe Tribe, there's the inspiration behind that, where we can catch people very early on in their careers and give them that confidence and that sort of insights that, you know, the lessons we've had along the way, just really give them those core skills that I think are absolutely essential to really making a positive change with health and safety. If you spend your entire life waiting for everything to be perfect, you're never going to do anything. Honestly, when I tell you that was the kick up the backside I needed, to the point where that night I remember being up all night like, how am I going to make this happen?
Right, mate. Welcome to Rebranding Safety. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm good. Very good. I'm busy, but that's what I like to be doing, so I can't complain. So, yeah, no. Been a busy couple of months.
Yeah, because you're doing both, like, consulting or like, freelance work and doing Safe Tribe as well, aren't you? So you must be rammed.
Yeah, so I've... I do predominantly, so I went self-employed at the start of the year, and I've mainly been doing contract work, which has really suited me. And then I do like bits for other clients, sort of from the consultancy perspective around that. And yeah, it's just that sort of like guaranteed work every week, every month. And then it gives me the flexibility to do things around that that I'm quite passionate about. So yeah, it's been a busy, I've been trying to claw back a little bit. I don't know if you've found the same with your work, but construction really dried up over the summer. And I think that's because a lot of people go back home for the summer. Mm-hmm. I think people were reluctant. I work on a lot of like house building sites, so a lot of people were quite reluctant to buy houses. So I think they scaled back people on site. So I'm now clawing back the quieter days from August and September to this month and even December. Just I think I've got maybe 2-3 days, which is great. So right. Yeah, it's been good.
Yeah. It's so hard to get a gauge of like what's actually going on in like the economy, because like I remember, I don't know, it must have been around summertime actually, like you'd have like the news started being like, oh, everything's shit, which kind of pretty much all the news says, really, to be honest. Yeah. But, and then I always, my mate's a house builder. So he works on like big house building sites. And I always just kind of use him as my barometer. Like I always find that once house building slows down, that's like such a big part of the British kind of economy in a way that everything else kind of feeds construction. So if they slow, I'm like, that's interesting. And then I just start to see other things slow. So I always kind of use him as a barometer. And back, like, it must have been summertime, he was like, we're hearing that some sites are slow, but ours are quite good. So I was like, oh, okay, then cool. And then I was talking to him literally like a week or two ago, and he was like, it's gone really slow now, like loads of gangs are getting laid off and that. So I was a bit like, oh, a bit worried about that. But then I'll go and talk to other customers, and they're just absolutely rammed. And like, another businesses that we network with and stuff, and they're all just like so busy. And I just can't get, yeah. I can't get head in the tail of what's actually going on.
Yeah, I must admit, so I put all my eggs in one basket. I got first year of being self-employed, you know, got secured very good contracts, and I probably got my feet, I got a little bit too comfortable with it, and then I didn't really do much else around that, and then a couple of things changed, and I was left thinking, is it okay to swear on here, by the way, because I do swear naturally, so just...
More swearing the better.
Perfect. So I was like, shit, like, what am I gonna do? I haven't got you know, a backup plan, basically. And then I was like, that's fine, I'll really push out to my construction clients. And then they're like, oh, we've got nothing going on. And I was like, oh god, what am I gonna do? So I branched out to a new contract in the manufacturing industry, and it's like nutraceuticals, so they do like gummies, health products, stuff like that. And I have never seen a business grow the way this business is growing, and it's a really exciting time to be working with them, to be fair. So I've got a contract 3 days a week with them, which is now very good, and we signed them for quite a while, but basically they can't keep up with their growth. They're Kent's fastest growing business, and they've literally, I think I started doing work with them in September, and they had about 80 staff. They'd started January this year with 20, and they're now on 150. And it's just rapid. And their orders, you know, they're shipping worldwide. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's different industries, and it's been quite nice to sort of move away from the construction side of things a little bit, because I've probably been a little bit too dependent on it. It's what I know. But actually, you know, I'm learning a lot with the manufacturing side of things. But it's also nice to see a thriving industry, a thriving business. So it's putting my mind at ease a little bit more that, you know, things aren't going to dry up anytime soon.
It's so hard, isn't it, to gauge what's going on. But that sounds like a nice little gig, mate. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good.
Anyone that kind of knows you on LinkedIn will probably know we didn't get you on to talk about kind of just normal safety work. I wanted to kind of talk about kind of Safe Tribe and what was going on there. So I suppose, in case people don't really know what it is, that, like, because I want to talk about the story of it and the journey of it and where you are, what's going on now, and the future of it. You just want to introduce it first, kind of as to what it is, and so that people just kind of understand what we're talking about before we go and tell the story of it. And then people are like, what are they talking about?
Yeah, I'll give you my elevator pitch. I've been working on
perfect.
I've been told to be a bit more concise about these sorts of things. So, yeah, the Safe Tribe is essentially what I like to call one-stop shop. So it's an app that you can download onto your phone, and it's designed to sort of rebuild a proper sense of community for health and safety professionals. It's quite a lonely place to be sometimes, especially if you're out on your own. So it's kind of like a community in your pocket. So we've got community forums that you can go on to, and then we really focus on upskilling. We've got quite a lot of new people to the safety industry that have joined. So what we're looking to do is upskill them. So each month we bring professionals in the core, what we call the core skills industry. So those real influence and skills that are essential in safety, to come on and do tailored workshops with the community. We partner with organisations that sort of align with our goals for the community. We're just building slowly but surely a strong sort of community feel with like-minded people that want to really push the boundaries of what they're doing in safety, you know, challenge the status quo, so to speak, and they've got a safe space to do that.
Nice. There's so much, I know we spoke before, and like what we tried to do with Project Millennium, and then what led into the Health and Safety Network, and we kind of wound that down now, is very much exactly the same as what you're doing and trying to do.
Yeah.
with Safety Drive, and I found it so interesting. Like when I first saw you kind of come up with that post, and I was just like, oh, hello, and it was interesting, and I wanted to kind of keep an eye on it, and then we had a good chat, and there are some challenges which I know we've both experienced, very similar challenges, which maybe we'll get into, but I do feel, I suppose you're preaching to the converted in this podcast, because I think what you're doing is definitely needed. But talk to me about like why do it? Like why, if I was to kind of maybe just think of some things, I would be like, well, community in your pocket, or well, I've got that on LinkedIn, or a community of safety professionals, or I can get that on our professional membership. You know, what is it that you felt like maybe you were missing, or the profession was missing, or what is that? It's a bit of a cliche now, but that kind of Simon Sinek why, like what, why did you kind of go, no, this is something we need?
I think for me, I casted my memory back to my early days working in health and safety. My first role was as a safety manager. We kind of took on, probably within my first year of my role, quite a large facilities management contract. And I was suddenly left in charge of 100 sites, God knows how many engineers working in really high risk mental health wards doing construction work. And I was really lonely, and you know, there were platforms like LinkedIn, there was membership bodies that I was a member of, but I think sometimes your voice gets quite diluted in those sorts of environments. There was also a little bit of fear. So for example, on LinkedIn, I had my peers, I had my colleagues, and you know, perhaps there was something going on that I wanted to talk about, so maybe I was dealing with a problematic board member. I didn't want that on LinkedIn to go, you know, how do I deal with this person that's making my life really difficult, and how do I influence them? How do I, you know, get them on board? Because I just didn't feel comfortable posting about those sorts of things on the more traditional platforms. So it's sort of designed to create that more safe, secure environment amongst like-minded people. And then, yeah, like you say, there's a lot of content out there that, you know, you can get from all over the place. But what I really wanted this to do, or what I want this to become, is a really member-led community. And we're already seeing that with the members that we've got, in the sense of, larger membership bodies. There's a lot of merit to it. There's, you know, a lot of benefits to that. But I think you become lost in this sea of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. Your voice doesn't always get as heard. Whereas with the Safe Tribe, the idea behind it is, you know, we're a smaller community, you know, I'm in direct contact with everyone, I know all the members, and, you know, hopefully as we grow, we'll have sort of community managers as well, but it's going to be a very personal touch that the members drive what we're putting out there for them. So as much as there's a lot of things we envision and we're going to be putting forward for the next year already, we've got a lot of content planned for it, but actually, we listen to what the members want and we try and deliver that, because that's fundamentally, it's their membership, it's their community, and everyone can support each other. So yeah, the idea of it was all just to be in one place, you know, rather than having to sort of jump around. I'm quite a person of convenience, you know, I like to be able to go onto something and just have it all in one place. I hate searching around for things and, you know, jumping from platform to platform. So yeah, the idea is just to kind of centralize all those elements that are scattered around in a secure place.
When was that kind of the moment? Was it gradual, Amy? Was it like the vision and what it, but also not just the vision of like, I can see the problem, but like building a solution, was that gradual, or were you like, no, this is exactly what I need, or did you get inspiration from somewhere else? Or like, I'd be dead interested, was there like a sitting on the sofa and going, fuck me, I've got it, or was it just a real slow burn?
It's been a slow burner. It's so something about me is I sit on things for quite a long time. I consider myself quite an impulsive person in a lot of aspects of things, but there's also things that I do that I like to sort of get right. And the concept behind a sort of a platform, an all-in-one place has been on the back of my mind for probably 2 years. I've been thinking about it for a long time, never really sort of explored it. And then it wasn't until I went out on my own last year, which was a decision I wanted to do for a long time, but I've been sitting on that for a long time as well. And I just think I got a pair of bollocks, to be honest, and was like, if I sit and procrastinate on this, I'm never going to do it. I'm never going to do it. And then someone else is going to, you know, jump in there and I'm going to be kicking myself for not just having the confidence, because I have a bit of a fear of failure. And that's a personal thing that I'm working through. So I then spent, I had a couple of really good contracts this year that came to an end. I had quite a bit of spare time on my hands. And so I was at a crossroads of, do I just carry on plugging my consultancy work? But it was, I'll tell you what it was. I'll tell you what was the real sort of, actually, no, I am going to fucking do this, was I was out on site. I was out on building sites and I was talking to the guys that, you know, I work with, I do consultancy work with, and I really strive to be more than just a tick box safety consultant. You know, if I find that I've done work with someone and they just see me as a tick box, I won't work with them. You know, I don't care about the payday that much that I'm going to sort of sell myself short, because I can't cope with going to the same place again and again and again. And it's just the same issues coming up again and again and again. So anyway, I was talking to the guys and I was like making a really good impact with what we were doing and really seeing the culture change within the company, this particular contractor that I do a lot of work with still now. But the problem was the they were just the contractor on site, but the actual safety teams that they deal with on a day-to-day basis that are from the principal contractor are very much set in that sort of old school mindset. And I thought, I'm never gonna make a true impact in safety and with the people that we're trying to really get on board and really trying to help, because that's what we're up against. There's this, and I'm not slating, you know, safety professionals whatsoever. I think it's a problem that's, you know, very complex and very deep rooted. But actually, we've got a lot of elements in the safety world that I think have just been accepted and become embedded in the sort of culture of being a safety professional, and we don't challenge them. And then it's just Groundhog Day again and again and again. And, you know, I've got guys working on sites that literally have to jump through these ridiculous hoops and these ridiculous tick box exercises, essentially. And they fucking hate health and safety professionals. They just, it's like oil and water. We can't mix. It's just weird. There's this no cohesion between us. And I just thought, I need to get to the root of this problem. And I'm not professing that I'm going to solve that issue overnight, but I think, you know, if we start making that effort, you know, slowly but surely, and I really wanted to start influencing and just sort of giving safety professionals that I think a lot of people think the same way we do, but don't have the confidence. I think we're lucky, James, because we're self-employed, and I think we're probably in the best position to challenge and question these things, because I'm not worried about losing my job. But I've had a lot of people reach out to me privately and sort of when I've put, you know, a thought-provoking, you know, questioning statement about something we do in safety, even as far as something as silly as, you know, how we write risk assessments. And they're too scared to even comment publicly on LinkedIn because the fear of what their peers will think. And it's like, how are we ever going to make an impact? How are we ever going to make change if we're still stuck in this mindset? So I'm really going on about this in a very long-winded way. But I'm really passionate.
You can go.
I just think that actually the Safe Tribe, there's the inspiration behind that where we can catch people very early on in their careers and give them that confidence and that sort of insights that, you know, the lessons we've had along the way where, you know, we've been caught out and we've had those difficult conversations with other safety professionals and just really given those core skills that I think are absolutely essential to really making a positive change with health and safety. You know, I love my job. I really love what I do, but there's a real shame surrounding it. I wrote an article about this recently, you know, like go down the pub a bit more than I care to admit. And when I meet new people, they go, well, what do you do? And I'm like, I work in health and safety, and all of a sudden it's like you've been having this brilliant chat and you get on and you've got this good banter going on with someone, and then all of a sudden you tell them what you're doing and they're like, oh, fuck that, she's a narc, I don't want to deal with her. Because we've given that impression across our industry, like, we are those clipboard Collins that everyone goes on about, that, you know, no disrespect to any Collins out there, I'm sure you're all fab, but it's just, it's really sad that we're in this sort of state, and I don't know how we get out of it. And I think it starts with how we upskill our safety professionals and get them early on.
I know a Colin, and he's not a clipboard Colin, so yeah, like,
I think I know the Colin you're talking about. That's I put that caveat in. I think he messaged me earlier and I was like, you're a good Colin.
But the other Colin's probably terrible.
Yeah. Give him a miss.
Something about the name. No, mate, there's so much in what you're saying. It's so funny that I don't know, sometimes I just, when we first spoke about it, I remember just thinking, like, I was very I can't think of it, and it's really annoying me, like, reassured, or like some kind of confirmation or affirmation in a way, and like, I wasn't kind of alone. And I think there are a lot of people that think like us, but ultimately you're right in that they don't publicly say it. Like, when so many times we're doing stuff on Rebrand and Safety and we put stuff out and people will DM me and say, love that video, that was so true, like, risk assessments are shit, toolbox talks are shit, but the only people that publicly comment other people go, no, you're wrong. There's nothing wrong with risk assessments. There's nothing wrong with toolbox talks and stuff. And it's interesting, because it's like, I need those people to support me publicly, because that helps me and it helps the channel and it helps the message that we're all trying to do, right? So, like, in my world, Rebrand Safety. But I don't feel safe to do that, which is interesting. And what we found in the network previously, PM, was exactly what you're trying to achieve with Safe Tribe, which I think that you will achieve and probably have already, is a psychologically safe space for people to just talk and say what they think and be honest, and then, you know, vent that stuff to someone else who potentially in the same position, and then they bounce it off of each other, and then they fix themselves in a way, don't they? And it's a beautiful, and I think it's amazing. But you're so right in that we've still got so far to go. And like, what do you think if, like, someone was listening to that little clip of you saying, let's say I clip this up, right, and I put a little clip of you saying, oh, you know, people still think we're the policeman, and the person listening to that, they roll their eyes and they think, oh God, she hasn't got any idea, that's so old, that's so yesterday, it's not like that anymore. Like, how would you respond to that person?
God, you're really challenging me now, James. But how would I respond to that? I think I did a bit of a deep dive recently, and I looked at some health and safety stats over the years. So I compared the HSE stats over the last 10 years to sort of see where we were at. And I know that's not making it a sort of absolute conclusion, but for me it certainly gave me a bit of an indicator as to where we were and where we are now. And what was quite shocking was the stats are pretty much the same. You know, the fatalities I think was a slightly lower, but that's gone up again, hasn't it, since the new stats have been released last week or this week, whenever it was. We see an increase in people still suffering from musculoskeletal issues, mental health problems, sickness, the amount of riddles that are being reported, all these sorts of things. And it's like, if we were comparing that into another industry, for example, you know, we've seen over the last sort of 10, 15 years, such a rapid increase in the way technology is working, and just the things we've got access to, medical advances, you know, there's all these things out there that really are just, it's like a g-force, it's going so quickly, it's improving so rapidly. But the safety industry, in my opinion, is stagnating a little bit. So I think when people say we are coming far, I would then throw back to them those stats and say, how can we say that when we've still got the same, we're essentially, in my opinion, in the same situation that we were 10 years ago. You know, I think there's a lot of things that have come on leaps and bounds, but the fundamental elements of it are, is that you still go onto a building site, you will still walk into a pub and you'll say what you do for a living, and people don't want to engage with you. And I think there's probably not one person listening to this that's works in health and safety that can't say that they've never had that sort of interaction. I would put a lot of money on it to say that people would definitely be like, yeah, I can absolutely relate. You know, even if you look in the media, I live in Kent, and there was an article probably about 6 months ago. So there was a Banksy in Margate, and it was like, it's quite a cool little Banksy. You'd probably be able to Google it. And it's like a guy falling into a dumpster. And the council obviously saw it as like a bit of a money-making scheme, because we've got another Banksy in Folkestone, and they've like perspex around it, and, you know, to protect it. So this dumpster got moved, basically. And there's all this furore, there's all this uproar, and everyone's like, it's bloody health and safety. Now, no one's been involved from a safety perspective in that decision. That is the council with their own agenda, their own opinions on that. But we're still getting the blame for things. We still become that scapegoat for like uncomfortable decisions. And I overhear that dialogue quite a lot on site. So like, I'll hear managers say, oh mate, can you not do that? Oh, it's because of health and safety. And it becomes that negative reason why. So I think, yeah, I think as much as people might want to argue that, I don't see the evidence that supports that we're doing better. I just can't see it.
Mm.
I don't know what your thoughts are on that. I said, I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
So that, very much the same. I pretty much verbatim said exactly what you just said. Probably in about 20 previous podcasts. I think the technology to safety stats comparison, I can't remember if we put it in this guidebook that we've just produced and started sending out to people, or whether we put it in the next one, I can't remember. But I've made that same analogy. Yeah. There's a really good paper on, what was it, childbirth. Really good one on childbirth, where it's not good, it's horrible, but it's the phrase in it where they say the world is great, the world is horrible, the world could be better, or something like that. And it's like all of these statements are true at the same time. So the world is better because child death used to be really high. Now it's quite low, but the figures are still quite shocking. And I was like, you could do very much the same with safety. So like before the Health and Safety at Work Act, it was a horrible place to work in, you know, anywhere, but particularly in the UK. Then the Health and Safety at Work Act changed in, and you start to see a dramatic drop in the stats. And you can see that in the health and safety stats. And then it's been broadly flat, is the phrase that the HSE uses and has used for about nearly two decades, actually, when you properly look at it. It's quite shocking. But if you look at that, they say, oh, it remained broadly flat. But it's still on average like 130, 140 deaths a year at work. And that's not including, you know, health. That's not including mental health. That's not including musculoskeletal. It's not including anything like that. That's just people dying at work. And then,
yeah.
So picking out what you're talking about, there's the two things. There's the narrative, how people see the safety profession, which I still think very much exists, and I completely agree with you. I want to pause that one there and put that in like the car park for a minute and come back to that one. I want to put you on spot again with the stats one, right? So this is, I'm going to put you on the spot because you said exactly the same as me. And this is a challenge that I got from a good friend of mine, Sam, probably about 2 years ago. And at the time, I vehemently disagreed with him. I was like, no, that's wrong. I don't want to believe that, blah, blah, blah. And now and ponder it quite a lot. So I think about this statement a lot. So he said, what if 130 deaths is just the price of the economy? We're a very successful economy. And when you look at how many man hours or people hours are worked in the UK, it's probably like multi-billion people hours worked in the UK. Actually, if you statistically compare that to 130 deaths, that's quite good.
Mm.
So what he's saying is it just a statistical, unavoidable phenomenon in a way that to work that many hours, it's inevitable you'll get that many deaths?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that I've thought about, because like you say, I don't know, I watch quite a lot of TV shows, things like The Deadliest Catch, you know, and like guys that go out there and put themselves very much in harm's way for the sake of quite a lucrative payday. But, and I've got to be a little bit careful how I talk about this, because it has only just happened, but... I go to a site here in Kent. It's been on the news now, to be fair, but there was a fatality 2 weeks ago. And that's sort of the first time I've encountered that on a sort of not so much on a personal level, but like really being on a site that's happened. I don't work there regularly, but I do visit there maybe once a month. And seeing the impact that's made on the guys, the site managers, his wife, his family, you know, the people that know him. It's a very small local community. A lot of the people that work on that site live in that local area. And then I was out on similar sites that are all sort of run by the same company last week. And there's just been a shift in how people feel, how people react. And I think it kind of put that human element back into it again for me, in the sense of when we look at stats, I do think we have to be quite pragmatic about those sorts of things. But it kind of reaffirmed to me when I saw that human element and how it's really hurt, how it's really had a ripple effect on, you know, that one death hasn't just affected that one person, that's affected actually a significant amount of more people. You know, that guy had two kids, had a wife, he had a parents, he had siblings, you know, mates, and you know, we talk about mental health in construction as well, you know, suicide, problems like that, what potential effect that's going to have on the guys that he works with. So as much as we say it's 135 people, actually that's a lot more people that are affected. So you could argue that that's, in my opinion, a much higher number, and we don't really look at the ripple effect that it tends to have. So yeah, I do agree with that, but I think it's when it hits you personally, it's not about just being a statistic, is it? It's about, you know, that real human element. And I think that's what I like to, I consider myself to be more of a, I think with my heart more than my head sometimes. My heart's always where I get my first reaction from. And I do then like to sort of engage my head and think, actually, you know, these are the things we've got to think about. We've got to be pragmatic about it. And we've got to see, you know, the logical side of things. But actually, you know, in those sorts of situations, it's, I wouldn't be very good at my job if I became too, I think, analytical with those sorts of things. For me personally, anyway, I think my way I think with my heart probably is what makes me good at my job and makes me good at having an impact with people. So yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, and I do agree with what Sam's saying. I think I've really felt the impact of that fatality 2 weeks ago, and how many people that's really affected. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, behind the stats is always a story, isn't there? Definitely. I like that. So then we've gone quite heavy into probably those two kind of challenges, and essentially that probably feeds a lot into the why. I do want to kind of touch on that narrative piece though, like probably before we get into the journey of SafeTribe, like when we talk about how people perceive us, essentially that perception has to come from somewhere, right? So it's like you said, to try and solve that problem, you've kind of tried to tackle, you're trying to tackle the source of it, e.g. the profession. So when you say like the Safe Tribe is kind of all in one place and we're trying to upskill the profession, what are the skills that you're thinking we're missing then?
So for me, I've done a lot of health and safety courses over the years. I've taught a lot of health and safety courses. So I've got a few NEBOSH certs. I've got the NCRQ diploma. I've taught IOSH courses. I've taught CITB courses. But I think what traditional, and they're important courses at the end of the day, because they, you know, they fundamentally set the technical basis for us to, you know, go out and do our job, which is absolutely important. But I think they lack core skills. And I've sort of noticed that as a common theme throughout a lot of things that I've done. And that's, you know, that's no shade to, you've got a limited amount of things that you can teach. So I think that when I think about what has made me successful in my role and what's had the most impact, it's not been my ability to know legislation off the top of my head. It's not been the fact that I can identify every single hazard, you know, involved with demolition. It's actually the fact that I can go out there and I can have a conversation with people and I'm pretty confident. And I can go out onto a building site and talk to 20, you know, blokes and get involved, you know, in their banter and taking the piss and just having a bit of a laugh, getting to know them, asking them questions about their life, all the way up to going into a boardroom full of suited and booted, you know, people that are of a completely different mindset, completely different motivators, and still influence them in a way that's very different to the way I would influence someone that's out on site, for example, and everyone else that's in between. You know, I stand up in front of groups of people and I have to deliver, you know, a talk on something, or, you know, just catching up with people, or standing up in front of a room of directors and presenting them with the stats and then getting grilled on, you know, why is this not this? And, you know, having to sort of, I struggle because there's things, traditional things in safety that I'm not, and this is probably a conversation for another day, but, and you're probably, you know, preaching to the choir here, but like, I have quite an issue with safety metrics. I've had quite a few disagreements over the years, but a lot of that stuff is common practice. So when you go into a boardroom of directors and you're saying to them, you know, I don't agree with measuring or having a set target where you've got to report two near misses a day, for example, like that, you've then got to go in there and make the business case as to why. I can't just say, well, I don't agree with it. You've got to try and speak to them in their own language, because they want something that's a metric to measure success by. So there's all these skills that go into it that I think are really, really fucking hard. And for a lot of us, you know, some of these things don't come naturally, you know, like I'm very good at standing up in front of a room of people and talking and giving off this like air of confidence. But what I'm not very good at sometimes is, you know, listening to people and listening to what people have to say and really understanding what they're trying to say to me. And that's a skill that I've really had to work on. And, you know, there's other elements of my confidence that, you know, there's certain groups of people that I'm very confident talking in front of, other groups of people that I'm not so confident talking in front of. So there's things that we have to develop. And I think the success comes from those core skills rather than the technical knowledge, because at the end of the day, we live in a society now where if I need to know something or if I need to find something out, I use the internet. And I'll use the prime example of how that's really benefiting me at the moment is I mentioned earlier that I've just started a manufacturing contract with a company. So this is the first time I've done work in manufacturing, and like a more food safety environment, because they do a lot of plant-based meat and stuff like that. And it's very easy to get overwhelmed by the fact that I've never worked, and they even said to me they had other people that they spoke to that actually had more experience in that background than I did, but I came across as really personable and, you know, chatty and confident. And when they asked me like how I would approach things and I explained my approach, they were like, this is what we need. And what I've gone in there and done is, so we've got like machine operators. You know, these are machines I have got no fucking idea how to operate, but I'm putting the ownership onto the guys. I'm giving them that confidence, and I'm putting things in place that give them the control. And that's such an important thing, I think, as a health and safety person, is you're more of a facilitator than anything else. And so I'm learning from the workforce just as much as they're learning things from me. And I think that's none of that skill comes from my technical knowledge on things, because I'm letting them drive. Like when we're writing an SOP, for example, on how to use a machine, I let them dictate that to me. And then I might interject if there's something, you know, I've thought about or need to put in place. But actually, they are the SME in that particular area. And I think we get a little bit blindsided by that in safety, that we have these theories and these principles, which I do think you need to apply to things. But I think people get a bit too focused on those. And then when you need an out-of-the-box solution, and I've had this many times in my career when I worked for a principal contractor, we had to think of out-of-the-box solutions, you know. And I think we had this discussion last time that we have to swallow our pride a little bit when we work in safety, because a lot of the time it's a hard pill to swallow when you realise that you're not always the priority. Safety, as much as people say it is, safety is not the priority for a lot of companies. Profit is, production is, you know, and I'm really seeing that now working in a manufacturing environment, how important and how much of a driver that is. And so sometimes you have to find solutions that allow those main motivators in a business to still be effective and still be adhered to whilst, you know, trying to keep people safe and ensure everyone goes home and, you know, all that good stuff. So yeah, I think those core skills are the key to that, and I just don't think we get that on traditional courses. Yeah. So again, I'm long-winded way of talking about it. I do go off on a tangent, so I do apologize, but I feel very strongly on it.
That's good. Yeah. I think passion is good, mate. I think it's good. When we talk about it in our framework and the guidebook, and we break it down into three. So we call it like task competence, which I think is what NEBOSH, NCIQ, NVQ,
yes,
IOSH probably do. They do very well, is task competency, where I think we start to lack of the other two, what we would call risk competency. So being able to interpret the, if we were talking operational staff, we would probably say understand hazards, identify hazards, and then make kind of risk-based decisions, or essentially doing a risk assessment, right? And then social skills would be the other one. So can we inspire people? Can we communicate with people? Do we know the different styles and when to use them? And do we understand that a novel emergency situation is going to be very different from the start of a project or something like that? Very different styles of communicating and very different ways to inspire action. So we talk about it in those three: tasks, risk, and social. I often think about how would I apply that to the safety profession. I think within task, we kind of have three different tasks, kind of in a way, maybe two, and we have like legal compliance, or maybe not legal compliance, but like demonstrating compliance, so like insurance, customer compliance, accreditations, and then obviously legal compliance as well. So I'd say compliance I would put into all of those things. Then I'd probably say we have like kind of technical compliance, like understanding those hazards that we're interacting with as a business to like the nth degree for the ones that work for you. Then I think we go over into that risk competence, which for us is risk-based thinking, is critical thinking, it's things like that. We are able to understand that safety is not the priority, it's a priority, to your point. You know, it's sometimes when we're in a situation, if we got three lads and they're at the top of a telecoms tower and it's a windy day and all they've got is a harness and stuff, you're like, yeah, do you know what? Safety is the first priority right now. But getting that antenna up, making money is also a priority. So like actually maybe instead of just take the number in a way and just be like, they're all kind of priorities, which we tend to talk about that using Rasmussen's dynamic safety model. I think that's a really good way of communicating. I think what he did in that model is really, really good. Niboshi used to use it, and I don't think they do anymore, but like it's the weird curved like triangle that I don't know if you've ever seen it. And I'm it's got sure. like lots of lines. You'll know it if you see it, I bet. But a lot of people yeah. kind of call it what it is. So, but yeah, it's his is really good. So he talks about you've got like performance failure. So you fail from a performance point of view, which he would put safety in there. And then you've got resource, which is enough staff, enough materials and stuff like that. Then you've got economic or financial, which is, you know, we don't go over budget. You know, we make a profit margin and so on and so on. So actually what he, and then he puts like a, we use a simplified version of it just because the academic one's a bit messy. So when we're talking to small businesses particularly, we'll just use those three lines and we say, look, the dot in the middle is a person. And what we're trying to do is not touch any of those lines. And sometimes we get really close to one line and far away from another, but it depends on the job. So I don't think safety professionals are very good at understanding that and having the ability or the bravery, to your point, to be able to say, actually, we are going to have to take a bit of a risk. Because ultimately it's a scary risk, right? Like if we screw up, like we have to kind of put the hand on the back of the safety professional as well. Like you said, it's really lonely. It's easy for us to sit here and say we're all shit, but at the same time, like, it's lonely, but it's also a lot of responsibility. Like you turn up at a business and that business so goes much. Okay, so are we safe, James? And you're like, I'm here to try and help you, but like you've just asked me if I'm gonna approve you as a safe business. Like that's a really hard thing to do, and you're taking on, I think you can feel like you're taking on the responsibility of all the lives and souls in that business, which is a really hard thing to mentally take on, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's quite an over, you know, I've certainly had in my career periods of overwhelm because what you touched upon a moment ago. So again, sort of using this as a more sort of practical example of something that I'm going through recently. So this manufacturing contract that I'm doing work with. So I've come into this business and, you know, the bar in terms of what I need to do, there's, you know, I've got so much that's a priority. There's a lot of things that I consider to be fairly high risk that need to be dealt with imminently. But there's so many things, and it's trying to then establish what's a priority. And I was having a conversation with someone in the business the other day, and they said, oh, like, have you been doing much with like the paperwork and things like that? And I said, no. I said, you know, I've done a little bit. I said, but to be honest, like, my priority is getting out there and really getting to know the workforce and really getting to understand their priorities and their problems and identifying things that, you know, I need to sort of really sort of push to the front of, you know, the queue essentially. And then I remember going back and thinking, God, I feel a bit fucking overwhelmed actually, because from a legal perspective, if something happens, you know, then they go down that route of, you know, we want to see paperwork in place and we want to see this. And in my opinion, that's not the priority. But from an insurance perspective, and then you've got like a financial director in the company that's, you know, missed the numbers, and he's like, we need to be thinking about this, and we need to have, you know, it becomes that whole, you know, we say it a lot in safety, the arse covering side of things. And it's really hard to sort of find that balance, find that sort of happy need, that sort of middle ground, that sort of, because everything is a priority, everything is quite daunting. And I think that's a really underestimated skill in safety professionals, is keeping your head, you're keeping your cool, you know, when you've got all these potential variables that could result in something going horribly wrong. And sometimes it's kind of like that. I don't know if you ever watched the show The Good Place, and I think they do it really well. And I think it's probably quite common. So there's a scene in there, and it's a guy called Chidi, and he's like a philosopher. He does like moral dilemmas and things like that. Anyway, long story short, there's a scene where he's talking to people about like what he does, and they're in heaven, and they like play out like, it's one of those, you can talk about something and then it happens because you're in heaven, or the good place, they call it. And it's that moral dilemma of like a train on a track, and you've got one child on one side, or you've got like a group of like 10 people, and the train's heading towards the child, and you've got the option to pull the lever and direct it towards the 10 adults, or you leave it and you go and hit that child. And I've had that conversation, you know, that's kind of, you know, like a pub chat sort of thing, and like, what would you do? And everyone's different, and it's really interesting to see how everyone comes at things, because I think the more pragmatists of my friends are like, well, I would keep it going towards the child, because actually, you know, that's the way it's already going. It's one life versus 10 lives. And then you've got other people that are like, no, fuck that, you know, I'm going to save the child. And then someone goes, well, what if that child was Hitler? Or like, it's all these things that come in, and it's really interesting to see like people's like different outlooks and perspectives on what you would do in that situation. And I feel like in safety, we probably face that quite a bit as well. I sometimes feel like I'm controlling that train, and it's like, what direction do we go? I'm sort of looping it back, you know, to the safe drive a little bit. It's sometimes good to get those sort of other opinions, because you might think, actually, this is a priority and this is what I need to do, but someone's going to come at it from a completely other sort of perspective or an actual lived experience, and be able to, you know, give you that sort of second opinion, third opinion, to help make a decision, when it can be quite overwhelming with the sort of things we face off against on a day-to-day basis in our day jobs.
Right, mate. So clearly something's happened, because we both look completely different and we're wearing completely different clothes. So I'll call the elephant in the room, in that this is halfway through the podcast. This is a completely different recording. So we weren't even, I think we were like 80% through the podcast, actually. We've been talking for like over an hour, I think. And literally my computer just went, just disappeared. Everything just shut down. So apologies for that, mate.
Green screen. It's okay.
It literally was green screen. Yeah, blue and green. I have no idea what happened. It's done it before. And the only thing I could do was turn it all completely off from the power, which if I couldn't do that whilst you were still on the call, so we just ended it. But, oh, well, we are where we are. We'll crack back
round
on. But I think, yeah, totally. I think what I was about to kind of try and move us on to anyway was just kind of, it'd be interesting to understand just kind of like a condensed version of the journey, really, that you've been on, kind of how you, because obviously it's an online platform that you've kind of, you've got in Safe Tribe, and just kind of understand like what the process of kind of, we've gone through your why and all of that and what you were trying to kind of fix, and what was it like going from, yeah, I'm going to do this, through to where it is now. Like that would, I bet that was quite an interesting journey.
Yeah, it's as I think I touched upon when we spoke last time, but if we didn't, I'll say it again.
God knows, I can't remember any of
it. Yeah, memory like a sieve. I was very much, it was very much something I've been thinking about for a while, and I'd sort of been debating it and wasn't really sure how that would look. And then it was funny, because I'd been toying with the idea for a while. And then work was getting a little bit quiet on the consultancy side, just the time of year and things like that. And I'd seen a post from someone on LinkedIn, not someone I know, someone I follow, and they'd said something about, basically, you know, if you spend your entire life waiting for everything to be perfect, you're never going to do anything. So just fucking do it. And honestly, when I tell you that was the kick up the backside I needed, that, to the point where that night, I remember being up all night like, how am I going to make this happen? So the first sort of step was really finding an app, a software that really sort of aligned with what I wanted the community to look like and how I wanted it to function. So I probably spent about a month trialing out different softwares, going to different sort of app developers, things like that. You know, this is a startup, so costs were, you know, a big thing, but I also wanted it to be a valuable app, and, you know, something that wasn't just going to be, you know, a load of rubbish. So we launched on the 6th of September. I'd sort of opened up the community just before that to a few people, just to come and trial it out, and we had like feedback sessions and things like that, and sort of it was agreed, you know, this is working well, this is a good app, it ticks sort of every box that we need it to do. So we went live on the 6th of September, And one of the things that I wanted this community to be was a real sort of member-led community. And so that means, you know, talking to the members about what they want, but also getting their feedback. And I sort of have encouraged them all sort of from day one to be really honest with me about things that they like, but also the things that they don't like as well. And just from my own user experience on the app as well that we were using, we had a few... it was the compatibility for Android phone users. So I'm an Android user, probably 20-30% of our members were as well. And the feedback was that it wasn't that good on an Android, and I was kind of feeling the same. So about a month ago, I made the decision to just transition over. I thought, God, is this going to make it really inconsistent? You know, is this going to cause problems? But actually, I think it's been a bit of a blessing in disguise, because one of the things that I couldn't do with the old app was go on like different membership platforms and things like that. Have different tiers of membership, which is what we've got now. So we launched on our new app 2 weeks ago, and it's a real breath of fresh air, and it meets the criteria and more for what we were looking for. There's a few more features and functions. There's a lot more that I can do with it. Even like the support from the back office with the app developers is tenfold better than what it was before. And then it's meant that what we've been able to do is actually lower our membership fees, which seems a little bit counterintuitive. Oh, but wow. One of the things that I want the community to be is a big community. I want it to grow. I want it, you know, at the end of the day, we learn from having lots of people. We learn from sharing knowledge with a greater audience. So what I've done is I have actually lowered the fee, because I think I touched upon this last time we spoke, but one of the key audiences that I really wanted to make this community appealing to was sort of new people to health and safety. And, you know, that comes at, you know, they're paying for courses. I'm sure a lot of them are studying for things like NEBOSH. They probably have signed up for, you know, other membership platforms, you know, that are sort of recognised widely in the industry. So, you know, they've got a lot of financial outlay. And because we want to upskill, because we want to really support and help people in the industry that are just getting started, I wanted it to make it a little bit more accessible for them as well. And then we can also have more people come in by that logic as well. So it's grown quite rapidly over the last 2 weeks since we launched that new membership platform, on the new platform. Mm-hmm. It's I've sort of seen a bit of an explosion in people coming into the community. So it's definitely heading in the right direction. So yeah, it's been really good. It's all part of the journey. And, you know, I think that quote that I read a few months back when it said, you know, things don't have to be perfect, to someone that probably self-describes themselves as a little bit of a perfectionist, it's been quite hard to, you know, come up against these challenges and things like that. You know, I had a couple of sleepless nights over the old app, like, you know, it's not performing. I felt bad because it was like, you know, it's going to disappoint people, those sorts of things. I felt, you know, annoyed at myself, but it's fine. And I think as soon as you tell people, you know, look, I think I want to move over to this new app, and sort of we had to transfer our existing members over to our new platform, I was really nervous about telling them. But, you know, it's, I think a lot of it's all in your head, isn't it, a lot of the time. So yeah, it's been a fun 3-4 months since we sort of started really, or since I started, like since I went live with the community, and yeah, I just it's been a fun ride so far. We've got some great people that are part of the community as well.
Awesome. That's so cool. I've got two more questions I want to go through, and then we'll nip it in the bud. One, question number one is, what this is a really cheesy question. but what does kind of success look like with it? Like, what's the end goal?
So this is something that I've thought quite long and hard about, and I think ultimately the big goal, the, you know, reach for the stars goal, is to really make an impact in our profession. And I think a lot of health and safety people say the same things. And, you know, there's what I'm finding since launching this community is I'm meeting, you know, like yourself, a lot of like-minded people like you. There's quite a few other people in this space as well that sort of share that vision. So it's unlocked that sort of group of like-minded people who I think we're all together working towards the same goal. And it's nice that, you know, we're all supporting each other and, you know, championing one another. But as you know, and, you know, we've spoke about this before, and I think we spoke about this last time, you know, the health and safety industry has a really bad reputation. And I want to be able to go onto a building site as a consultant for an independent contractor working on a site with 30, 40 other contractors as well, but feel that my impact is spread amongst all of their health and safety practitioners, as, you know, the principal contractor's health and safety team. Because at the moment, I feel that, like, the changes and the impact that I try and make internally in companies is effective, but it gets lost in the sort of grander scheme of things, because we've still got very old, very outdated, you know, things in our profession that, until those change, then I think it's very hard as a smaller consultant working for smaller companies. It's very difficult to have the impact that you think you're going to have. I don't know if you have that sort of experience as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a challenge. So yeah, I think, you know, long term, the success for me is the first time I'll be able to go out into a building site, or, you know, go out and see a client, and, you know, really see a difference in how we approach safety as a profession. And long term, I, you know, would like to hope that I can play a part in that, and it's not a one person job, you know, it's a community that we're building. So it's a collaborative effort, and, you know, I'm sort of just facilitating that, I think. So yeah, long term, that's what it would look, that's what success looks like to me anyway.
So if you went to a construction site or a client site tomorrow, and there's one thing you didn't see, the profession just doesn't push that anymore, or it's not a thing anymore, in the world of safety, that made you go, yeah, I feel like I've had an impact, I feel like I've contributed to that. Maybe, you know, it's not gone, oh, it was the safe try that made us get rid of this, but you feel like you've had some kind of contributory
played a part to that thing. Yeah,
like that thing disappearing, like, or maybe something being added on, whatever it is. Give me one tangible thing. Oh, that's a really shitty question, but one tangible thing that you'd either like to get rid of or see more of or see added in that make you go, yeah, that I'm happy now, I could retire happy.
Yeah, so controversial one, because it's something I feel quite strongly about and have sort of protested against for a couple of years now, from when I worked in companies, but bullshit safety metrics. That would be the one thing I would love to see the back of, because we've incentivized safety to the point where it's all about the end game, in terms of it's the score at the end of the audit that everyone focuses on. It's what success becomes sort of like the safest. You know, I don't think I've ever gone to a building site and not seen a leadership board with the percentage. And the problem is I've been on the, you know, the other side of that. And I've worked for clients before where we're getting phone calls the night before saying, by the way, the client's sending someone down tomorrow to do an audit, and the whole team knows, and the site looks immaculate, and we get the green audit, and it, you know, it looks fantastic, and everyone gets a pat on the back, including me. And I'm a little bit like, I know there's bigger problems on this site, because what it does is it then undermines the message that I'm trying to get across, because everyone goes, well, we've got a green audit, we're obviously doing all right. And it's like, we're not.
Makes it very hard for you to do your job.
It completely, and then I feel like it's such a catch-22 position as a safety professional, because I once with a company that I worked for, and they were really good, you know, I did have a very supportive leadership team, you know, they were very supportive, but the problem was it was out of their hands, because the client that we worked for, it's a big client, So the allocation of projects that we got given was based purely on safety metrics. So we used to have to record an X number of near misses every single day, which people would cheat the system. Like, I remember, because we have leadership boards, and I remember seeing one contractor had been on site for like 5 days and they had logged something stupid, like 60 near misses in 5 days. But they're like the best performing contractor. And it's like, you know, they've fabricated a lot of that. You know, they've got someone just, they're probably paying full time to do that because they're coming out top every time. So they're getting a better allocation of stores. So I think me and the leadership team in the company that I worked for were in a difficult position, because one time I basically turned around and was like, I'm not logging this shit. I'm not doing it. I'm really fed up of it. And I turned my phone off and I went to Paris for the weekend because I was like, I'm really done with this crap, because I feel like I'm having to spend more time sat in the office logging near misses all day long when I should be out on site dealing with the real problems. And I remember I took my work phone off and things like that. And then I got a call from my boss on the Sunday, I think it was. And she said to me, she said, you know, we've had a phone call from the client and they're not happy because nothing's been logged this week. And we're potentially going to get called up to head office. This is going to potentially affect our quotation stores. Like, you need to sort this out right now. So then I had to spend my entire journey on the train home from Paris, literally putting false data into a system just to get that green tick. And then it's like, cool, great, you've done a great job, look at all this stuff you've logged. And it's like there comes a point where it's like, does no one see what the problem is with this? Can no one see like how backwards this is? Because it becomes such a, in my opinion, it's actually quite dangerous, because real issues then, you know, don't get picked up upon. So yeah, I think that's the main thing I would love to see the back of, is incentivizing safety for the wrong reasons. And it's not an easy fix. I get there's, you know, I see a lot of debates on LinkedIn and people arguing back and forth, and there's various schools of thoughts and things like that. But like, my own experience of it has been a negative experience. And I do think that people, like anything, you know, people cheat the system, people find ways around it. It's all about sort of the stats at the end of it. And I don't think what we produce is accurate. And there's an integrity, I think, to our job role. I think, you know, I consider myself to be quite an integral, you know, an honest person. You know, I like to be really transparent and open, good or bad, about things. And there's just something about it just doesn't sit right with me, and it never has. And it's been the sort of underlining factor in my entire career, is that that's something that we've always had to focus on. And I feel like it's sort of affected me from being as effective at my job, and, you know, sites being as safe as they should be.
Nice.
Well, that could be a whole podcast episode in itself. So I'm not going to get down.
No.
We'll be here for another 3 hours until the computer crashes again. Okay, one last question, which is, I think, will be a good way to tie this all up. You mentioned about kind of like the multiple packages and stuff. What if you could give us like an insight? So like, what's it like as a member? Like, what does a member get? What is the community? You know, what's a month look like? What's a week look like? What's a year, or however it's kind of rotated or managed, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so we've relaunched. So we have two membership structures now. So the first is our community membership. And that is basically you pay $2.99, a one-off fee, and you get instant access to the community element of our app. So that is all the community forums, because
£2.99.
Yeah, that's it. But you get access straight into the app itself.
Just nothing else, not a month, just a one-off.
One-off, and it's, you get access straight into the app, but you don't get access to any other elements of the community. But you can join the chat rooms, you can join the forums, you can just start sort of networking, meeting people, having conversations. Because I think what I touched upon when we spoke last time, which is part of the same episode, is wanting to create that safe space for people. And again, like, you know, there are people out there that, particularly in the global audience as well, that, you know, don't feel as safe on, you know, even certain groups, you know, certain social networking platforms that, you know, it's all out there in the open. So I wanted to give them somewhere that they could just come, you know, they could meet other people, they could start networking, they can get a bit of a taste for the other side of the membership, which is our premium membership. But they don't have to commit to, you know, coming in as a premium member. They can sort of test it out, you know, just enjoy the community elements of the platform without sort of any real obligation. And then we move on to the premium side of it, which is sort of where things really ramp up. And again, we've lowered that down to $4.99 a month, just because the new app that we're running is more cost effective. It's a quarter of the price to run than what I was paying for the previous app. So much less overheads from that perspective. And it's now given us that scope to really sort of increase, you know, what we can bring to our members, and we can now increase the volume. So with the premium membership, you get all the elements of the community app. So all the chat rooms and things in the app, but then what it does is it unlocks other elements inside that app. So you get access to, so you'll get instant invitation to all of our events. So we run 2 events every month as a minimum. Normally probably going to start increasing that just with sort of little Brucey bonuses for people. But at the minute we have one course skills workshop a month, and we also have one sort of safety leadership, safety discussion. And we talk about, you know, I did a whole talk with Clive Lloyd on the problem with safety metrics a couple of months ago. We talk about things that I was just alluding to just then. You get access to all of our partnership benefits as well. So we've partnered with Leaderlike and the Healthy Work Company. We have a couple more partnerships in the pipeline as well, sponsorships and things like that. And basically with that, what we're doing is we help our members. So we give them access to things like discounted courses that are led and facilitated externally through these external partners. So, for example, we had a workshop last week with Leaderlike. They ran one of their first life-saving storytelling workshops, and 12 members of the community got invited in to come and do a workshop facilitated by Karen Hewitt. If you've not read her work, read her book People Power, it's fantastic. And she facilitated a workshop. The members absolutely loved it. It's normally worth £150 per person, and our members got that for free. We get discounted tickets to things like events, so conferences that are Healthy Work Company, for example, it's run by Heather Beach. She runs conferences and events, discounted tickets to things like that. She offers discounted and free spaces on some of her courses. She's going to be coming and doing some wellbeing webinars and workshops in the new year. We get discounted products, services, things like that. So really benefits, you know, and we only partner with businesses that we think are actually going to truly benefit our members. And then we also do a community call every month as well. We're sort of still ironing out the structure of that. It's quite nice though, because, you know, we sort of try and find the sweet spot with the right time for people. But people come along, we have a lovely chat, you know, we catch up on things, give them advice, things like that. So it's quite an informal call, but I like it being that way, because it's, you know, we're building rapport, we're building friendships, we're building a network. So I quite like how that's structured as well. So that's what you get as a premium member. So I think it's a lot of value for a low cost. And yeah, we've got more partnerships to hopefully announce in the new year. And yeah, it's a good time to join. It's a good community to be part of. You know, we've got a really lovely bunch of people that are in there so far. We've got really varied backgrounds as well. You know, we've got a mix of people that have been in the industry a long time. I've got a wealth of knowledge, and are going to join me in facilitating workshops and webinars as well, ones that I'm going to lead and things like that, which we all as well put in our Safety Bites library. So all the workshops and webinars that we do are live. People can come and join, but a lot of the time, you know, work commitments, home commitments, things like that can be difficult. So we record everything, and then on the app is our Safety Bites library, so you can watch anything back at any time as well. So we're also building content for people to make it a bit of a resource library as well. So yeah, that's kind of it in a big nutshell.
That's a lot cheaper than what I thought it was. That's amazing, mate. I think, why would you not? That sounds amazing. I know that when we used to do the network, or previously, as it was called before that, was Project Millie. I mean, it was more than that. And we I'd say a couple of things that you're touching on there about trying to find the sweet spot and stuff like that. We always found that a challenge, and I don't think people probably appreciate how much work you probably do behind the scenes, Amy, to keep that place going and that system running, and finding the speakers and all the little things that I think people probably think is simple. I don't think they quite value how much time and effort you put into that for such a cheap price. So I think hats off to you. Well done. And I genuinely do hope it succeeds.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, there is there is a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes, and I've had a couple of people sort of disagree with it being a charged platform, but I'm constantly networking with people. I'm constantly my brain doesn't switch off. I'm constantly trying to find ways to make it better for people and accessible. And I want this to become something that is a business that, does really serve a community. And in order to do that, there has to be sort of a bit of a financial incentive as well. But fundamentally, it's all about just trying to give back and really just trying to make it something that, as I said earlier, really makes an impact and really makes a difference. And I think 2024 is going to be an exciting year. Just sort of things that I've not really released yet, but some of the things we're working on, some of the partnerships we're working on, sort of it's going to take it to, I think, another level, an exciting level. Come along and see what it's all about. We are doing 7-day free trials as well. So if people aren't sure and, want to see what it's all about, you are invited to come and do a 7-day free trial, sort of try before you buy sort of thing as well. So.
Wow. Yes. That's amazing, mate. But
thank you.
I think that if people are, I think probably don't read into it too much would be my advice. I think there's a bit of, I don't know. I feel, again, this is probably a podcast in its own right, but I feel like safety has a bit of an issue with people making profit and business. And like, because I think I think back to my education in safety, it's very much been like the business pushes profit, but I want them to slow down and do things safely. And that's a cost. And I think we've been maybe taught to kind of demonize profitability of something. And instead of actually going, hang on, if Safe Tribe or Rebranding Safety or Risk Fluent or any of the other, amazing people that are doing amazing things out there, make profit, think of how much more stuff they could do. If we make profit, it's time for me and money for me to go and find a new product and try and come up with something else for the 100%. For the profession. So I think probably don't read in too much to that. I think as well, in a comparison, if you go outside of safety, so obviously we're both business owners and stuff, and we try to like network and things. I'm part of like a networking / mastermind community, which is very similar to what you're doing. There's a lot of mental health support. We're all going through the same problems and we discuss things, so that helps our mental health. There's also like general business improvement kind of stuff. There's a couple of coaches that run it, and then there's networking, right? I pay a metric shit ton more money than £4.99 a month. I think we experienced this when we did the network and Project Meletium. I think maybe that world or that perception of things hasn't quite made it into safety yet. So just a bit, I think we were mega too early. I think what you're doing sounds like a nice in between, actually. I think the balance you've got between community calls and webinars, I think is cool. So I think don't read into it too much. I think what you're doing is really cool, mate.
I think I've realised that, because like you say, there's definitely a stigma with sort of earning money, earning a living. And as you said, the more time I neglected the community for a couple of weeks because I was like, I need to claw back a bit of money with consultancy work and things like that, making it a business that I can live from means that I get to put more energy and I've got so many big ideas any big plans for this community, and then you can give it 100% rather than, I mean, I feel like I'm giving it 100% at the minute, but you know, it's like working two full-time jobs at the moment, and sometimes there has to be a balance, there has to be, you know, a little bit of a break. So yeah, it's as you say, it's probably another discussion on its own, but it's a funny old industry, isn't it, where we sort of do make people, and it's not like it's a badly paid profession as well. You know, we make good livings from it. You know, we do okay from it, but yeah, there's definitely a weird stigma, and as you say, there's a lot of work, and you know, the things you do with rebranding safety. You know, this podcast. You know, the amount of people that are listening to this, but the volume of work that's gone in back of house. You know, even just to get, you know, the software and get the speaks on and planning,
which doesn't work apparently.
It's fine, but it's a lot of things, isn't there, that goes into behind the scenes, and
I don't think people realize that, you know.
I think
the results are out, but I won't mention it in case I screw up, but ultimately I was on a judging panel of an award that has recently been announced or is about to be announced.
That is out. I did see that. Yeah,
it is out. Right. Okay. Well, just in case, I won't mention the winner or anything. But essentially, the judging panel kind of don't really do much. Sorry, that's a bit naughty. But we kind of create a short list of the long list, and then the long list goes back out, and then if the people get votes in the shortlist, I think it was, they essentially get more weight because the judges have backed those people, if that makes sense. So we do contribute to it, if that makes sense. But anyway, my point was that there was a discussion in this panel where I'm careful how I navigate this. So essentially there was a disagreement in the discussion in that if you're self-employed, you should be less considered for this award because you're doing it for profit and yourself, and you're doing it for yourself because it's your business. Now I am self-employed, and I have previously been in the top five or whatever it was of that award. So I vehemently disagreed with that. And I said, well, look, yeah, I'm not going to lie. It was good for me and my business to win to be in that top five or whatever it was, right? That's good for business. But you're telling me that it's not good for your career to also win this award? Like, it's exactly the same. And this person was like, no, it's not the same. Not the same. You're doing it for profit and your business. And I was like, you don't know what I'm doing it for. Like, that's nothing to do with you. But interestingly, there was a recruiter also in this panel of judges, and they also said, I'm a recruiter, and I'm telling you now, it's better for your career if you win this. So it's no different. It's no different. If you're employed or self-employed, it is no different. You deserve to win this award. And I thought that was a very interesting insight into how our profession views business people.
Yeah, and especially as like it's based on the merits of what they've done and what they're giving back. And surely that's, you know... As I think we've touched upon it before, and we've had this conversation before about, like, you know, when as safety professionals, you know, when you're dealing with people in business, you know, you have to swallow the pill very quickly that safety isn't the priority in the business. It's not. And the sooner you realise that, the better it is, because you can then crack on and actually make a difference, you know. And as a business owner, and I think I've come to realise this last year, how many plates you actually have to spin. You know, there's so many things. It isn't just about doing my job. It's about, you know, I've got to deal with my accountant, I've got to deal with the marketing, I've got to deal with, you know, sales, I've got to deal with, you know, client relationships and building rapport with people. I've got a network, and you're doing so many things, and it's hard, and it's like, and then we're kind of like, so it's, I think it's really bizarre that there's like a sort of stigma of that, because it's like, surely if someone's doing good, then
doesn't matter.
The result of what they've set out to achieve is good, then what's the problem? I think you touched on the root cause of that, and I think it goes back to how we're educated and how we're taught about how you know, businesses that earn a profit is, you know, they're the devil. And it's like,
yeah, well, if they don't earn a profit,
then we don't have a job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good point, actually. Well, I feel like we've pretty much just recorded a whole nother podcast of us moaning about profitability. Mate, if people want to join Safe Drive, how do they go about doing that? What's the best way to get started?
Yeah, so head over to just put in Google the Safe Tribe. .co.uk. It'll take you straight to our website. You can have a look around. We've got, I'm adding content on there at the moment of some of our speakers, so you can see people that we've had. And then there's a little link there. You select your membership option and it will take you through to the app. Download the app, you sign up and you're in. And it's as simple as that. Or you can come connect with me on LinkedIn. You know, if you've got more questions, just Amy Stillwell Cox on LinkedIn. I do respond to DMs. So if you have any more questions, not quite sure, feel free to drop me a message and I'm happy to answer anything.
Amazing. We shall put link to the website and your LinkedIn in the description below for everybody. But thank you very much for your time, Amy. Thanks for coming on. Apologies for the tech issue.
I'm going to
record this in two parts.
All right.
But yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
Expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.